Welcome back to another episode of Solana Moms Building Community, where we shine a light on the leaders, change makers, and everyday heroes making a difference right here in Solano County. Today, we're honored to be joined by a true public servant and longtime advocate for our communities, Supervisor John Vasquez, representing Solano County's 4th District, which includes the cities of Vacaville, Dixon, and some of the richest farmland in our state. Elected in 2002, Supervisor Vasquez has spent over 2 decades on the Board of Supervisors, serving as chair 8 times and bringing deep lived experience to his leadership. From growing up on the family farm to serving in the Army National Guard, from being a small business owner to holding leadership roles in local government, his journey is grounded in hard work, integrity, and service. In this episode, we will explore his deep commitment to preserving agriculture, protecting water resources, supporting veterans and seniors in combating homelessness and poverty in our region. We will also talk about his leadership on the issue of child obesity and why he believes the health of our children is directly tied to the future strength of our nation. We're excited to dive into this meaningful conversation and hear how Supervisor Vasquez continues to invest in the future of Solano County with both wisdom and heart. I would like to welcome my co-host. Today is not just a co-host, it's co-host, Patty Phillips, Paulina Sweeney. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Miriam. Good to see you again.
Yes, you too. I haven't seen you for a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah, we both have been busy. Hi, Paulina. This is your first time with us.
I know. First time as a co-host. I'm so excited.
Well, we're excited for you. We're so happy that you joined us and you're going to take the resources for today for your youth platform, because Paulina is our podcaster for our youth platform, Tomorrow's Table. And Patty, would you like to introduce our amazing host?
We're happy to be here in the office on 6th floor in Fairfield with Supervisor John Vasquez, who's been supervisor since 2003, you say?
Yes.
And we're going to hear a lot of history today. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you.
We're really excited to have you, and thank you for taking time to be here.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
All right, listeners, we're going to get to some questions that we have for John, and he'll be answering it.
I'll try to the very best I can, anyway.
Thank you. John, you have been serving as supervisor. What inspired you to dedicate your career to public service, and what keeps you motivated?
Well, first of all, the work. I truly enjoy the work. What motivates me is the community. My mother used to always say, just remember, what little you have, somebody has less. Mm. So be grateful for what you have and be able to share it. My parents were that way. The community was that way. I often give a lot of credit to my teachers. My first 5 teachers, they were all strong women who instilled in you that you needed to learn and then you needed to give back. And I think Vacaville, as I grew up, and I think I'm very fortunate to have grown up during that period of the 50s and 60s, that it was a community about giving back and doing. You know, if there was something that was needed, people got together and they got it done. Maybe not always agreeing on how to do it or agreeing with each other, but it happened. Mm. So coming from that kind of background, it's been embedded in me to do that. I often say I probably could have made more money doing different things, but that's not what motivates me to do this work. Being a county supervisor, to me, is the best elected job you can have. Mm. You're still very close to the community. You're not insulated like in Sacramento or in D.C. Mm. You still see the community every single day. Yeah. And I make an effort to get out every day. I have coffee the same place every morning. People come by and they'll tell me what I'm doing wrong or doing right. Mostly what I'm doing wrong, but that's okay because that goes with the job.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it sounds like you have a collaborative attitude from your upbringing.
I do. I think I do. And again, my family was involved in a lot of things and continues to be involved in a lot of things. But that comes from, you know, the upbringing of the community in the sense of giving back and working together.
Yeah. Your float is always one of my favorites in the Fiesta Days parade.
Well, that came about between, I was standing with my dad and my Uncle Bernie, And my Uncle Bernie looked over at my dad and didn't quite like the floats in the room. And he says to my dad, "Well, brother, don't you think we can do a better job?" And this is 1963. And by 1964, we were in the parade.
Yeah.
63 years now. And it's not that we started out to be, you know, 60 years of doing it. It's just you get up every year and you do it.
Yeah.
And after a while, it starts to all add up. And when it switched from Main Street and Buck, it changed the character of the parade. When you got to Buck Avenue, because it's a smaller street, and you look down at all the kids cheering and the people. And during that time, families had spots. And you could look back and forth and see, well, who's here, who's not, because you knew where they were going to be.
It was also shady.
Very shady.
Versus Merchant Street.
And Merchant Street has now taken on its own characteristics. Mm-hmm. As you go down, you see people where they kind of gather. You know, mm-hmm. people early on by Wednesday have got their pickups parked in their seats in place. So it's a good way of bringing back the community. I asked one time, in fact, a person who was the director of a museum, why do people go to parades? Any thoughts? Any reasons why? Can you think of a reason?
Celebrating our community.
To see themselves.
No.
To see the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you do. That's why people go to it. Because it is, the parades are usually of the community. So you go see the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hot, cold, rainy. People turn out.
Yeah, I like the energy at the parades.
Yeah.
Everybody's smiling, happy, and early. Usually it's early in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's in May, so it's hot.
So oh, then go okay. Early.
Well, it can be everything.
That's true. We have gotten rained out a few times.
Yeah. The float that you were talking about, Patty, would you let us know what this float is about?
Oh, yeah. They have dancers, and they have music, and the big skirts and all of that. It's just beautiful.
Will you be there this year?
Yes.
Okay, Paulina, we're going to cover
I'll
that.
I'll be in that parade, too.
Yeah.
I've been in both the Fairfield and Vacaville parade since I was, like, 7 because of pageants. And I live in Green Valley. I go to school at Vacaville High. But I see what you mean by the – I love going to the parade because it makes me feel good. And sometimes I want to live in Vacaville. There were years in middle school where I wanted to live in Vacaville rather than here in Fairfield because I had more friends in Vacaville. There were more – party-ish, it was more, you know? So I really, you're right, the parades, they just make you feel like you love where you live, you know?
Yeah, it has that excitement, the energy.
How have your early life experiences, from working on your family farm to serving in the National Guard, shaped your approach to leadership and decision-making?
You know, that's the question of leadership. I was asked that one time, you know, what makes a good leader? And I go, a good leader is somebody that's willing to share the fame and take the blame at the end. Because when you make those decisions, but you have to look at the totality of what's in front of you in order to make that decision. It can be quick, but that comes with knowledge and a little wisdom that allows you to make that quick decision. But most of the time you should look and play the thing out in your mind to make sure that you're making hopefully the right decision, because a lot of people are dependent upon that decision. We do that every year with our budget here. I got over 3,000 employees that are dependent upon us as a board making the right decisions to ensure that they still have a job.
Yeah.
And we, during 2008 in the Great Recession, we did a number of things. We had healthy reserves, and I'll thank former board members who, Solano County has been very frugal over the years and has put money away. And in that particular recession, we had nearly $100,000 in reserves. It allowed us to go through that recession. We did some early retirements, which helped people get out. We did another form of retirement. But in the very end, we had to let 150 people go. And sitting in that audience was a husband and wife, knowing that at the end of that day and that decision, they were not going to have a job.
Yeah, that's tough.
As somebody that has to do that, I never want to do that again. And I practice that to keep that frugality and not hire people, because I think that when you hire someone, there's kind of a moral obligation to make sure you have the work for them so they don't start building their life and their dreams based on your job for them.
The nonprofit that I work with, NAMI Solano County, is the same way. We are very careful about hiring because we're all on based on grants.
Yeah.
Our income is from grants. And in this environment, it's a little tough.
It always is tough for nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're always dependent upon a grant or a fundraiser or the community to support them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, if a nonprofit, tough.
Yeah. We're doing it. Making it happen.
Oh, yes, with the community support.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But the leadership part of it, I've watched. I probably talk more now in my later years than I ever did when I was younger because I was a better listener than a better speaker. Mm-hmm. So I learned that early on.
Yeah, that's good.
And I watched those individuals who I say mentored me to see how they did it and how they took decisions or questions or problems and worked them out.
Collaborating again.
And it's important. This year marks the 13th different individual I've worked with on the Board of Supervisors.
Wow.
So knowing your fellow colleagues, mm-hmm. knowing what they want, and, you know, at some point crossing over and saying, you know, I can help you there and help you there. We don't do anything on our own. It still takes 3 votes.
Mm. That's right.
So I can say all that I want to say and say I'm going to do this and do that. But without the support and help from at least 2 other colleagues, you don't get anything done.
Yeah.
But they also come with their own dreams and wishes. So it's the willingness to work together.
Yeah. Well, to change the subject a little, as a champion of agriculture and preservation, what are the biggest challenges in farmers in Solano County face today, and how are you addressing them?
Champion. I don't know that I'd use the word champion. I come, you know, from that background. My father, my grandfather was a farmer, which brought him out this way. My dad left farming for a short period and then went back into it. And we were fortunate that my father went back into farming because, you know, you learn the hard chores of farming. It's not an easy life. It's every day. I would say the greatest threat to farming is its viability. The profitability. It is a business. It's in an industry. And those individuals, which is less than 2% of the population today, still have to get up and want to go to work. If they stop doing that, I don't know what happens to us.
Yeah.
But we're reaching a point where I think the last 2 years we imported more food than we exported. So it's food security has become a true national issue.
Mm.
In California, we have what we call specialty crops. So we don't have the hard crops like you have in the Midwest. Wheat, corn, rice, you know, oats, and those things that are favored by the farm bill. They get a little more cotton. Those are all things that can be stored away and saved. Milk, you can make cheese out of it. You can use fresh milk. You can powder it. Those are things that are staples that can be held on to for a long time. In California, a lot of specialty crops. Keep a head of lettuce for, a week or maybe, or a tomato. So they go very rapidly. But yet there's a lot of profitability in that. But with all the regulatory issues that come with farming in California, all the input costs, it is increasingly more and more difficult to make a living at farming.
Yeah.
If you look at the rates of suicide, you'll find that farming is one of the highest.
Ooh.
So if I'm a farmer, diversified, and I have 10 to 15 crops that tend to come in a very close period of time, I have to manage all the harvesting of that.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It's expensive, and if one fails or two fail, there goes your profit for the year.
For the year.
So that's stressful. You know, that's good to know because my husband, Lucas, he has been telling me I'm going to start farming, and he wants to have blueberries. And I keep on telling him, this is going to take a lot of time. And also, what if those plants, like you said, die? You're going to be really sad. So I'm glad that he will listen to this podcast and then he will stop that dream. Because he really wants to be a farmer. But since I've met him, he really loves to farm things and he wants to do this.
Well, so. I would tell him to go to work for a blueberry farmer first.
There you go.
Oh, is there one here?
There may be some that have small acreages to do that. Solano County is home to, at any given time, 80 to 100 and plus crops and commodities.
Wow.
A very diversified county. We're not big in one thing,
mm-hmm.
but we have a lot of things. But the diversity comes from all the lands that are available and the water. The Solano Project, which was started in 1940 by the Board of Supervisors forming the first water committee, and then in 1949, the water group that became SID. And then by 53, we were in the construction of the Solano project. Mm-hmm. So that water belongs to Solano County. Nobody else wanted to invest in it. Here's little Solano County putting total financial obligation on the back of themselves and built that project.
And it worked.
Yeah, they were ahead of themselves because water is so important.
Yeah, 1.6 million acre feet of water is stored behind that dam. If we had got more investors, it would have been 2.2 million acre feet of water.
Was that Berryessa?
It's Berryessa.
Okay.
I call it, that's what they call it, the Solano Project, but it's, you know, it's Monticello Dam and Lake Berryessa.
Yeah, yeah.
But controversial at the time.
Oh, it's still to this day people talk about.
The dam was built on
Monticello.
On the Solano side.
Okay.
The lake is covering Berryessa Valley in the town of Monticello.
Yeah. Disappeared.
In Napa County. But yet Napa County gets just a little tiny bit of the water.
Because they didn't want to.
Nobody wanted it.
Commit.
Nobody wanted to commit.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go back and read the stories, the arguments against it.
Very strong.
Very strong.
Yeah.
Much like the North Rural Water District.
Very strong opinions. Which we were talking about earlier.
Very strong opinions about whether it should be or shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the fires affected the water management and farmers?
Well, that's mostly grazing land up there in western side of North County. Water, we look at it because we have some tributaries that feed the water system at Lake Solano. So we're out there making sure that it doesn't break apart and flood. Peter Creek goes into the Lake Solano, so we have to be worried about that lake too. We do a lot of restoration work there in the creek itself.
And Yellow then takes over, right? Yellow County around Winters?
It's split all the way down.
It's split all the way down. Yeah. Oh.
So there's the Yellow side, which is the north side of the creek, I would call it river.
I did not know that.
To continue with our water conversation, I have another question. You've been involved with water management extensively. Can you share your vision for ensuring sustainable water resources for both agricultural and the community?
Well, it started long before me. You know, the whole use of water and its finite resource. Again, that's the reason that the Solano Project came to be, because there wasn't water, and yet there was ample water coming through what they call Devil's Gate. It's now where the dam sits. So much conversation about damming that, even at the turn of the century. I forget the date that it was surveyed, but then even the town of Richmond looked at building the dam. And in California, it's kind of unique with water rights. You know, all you have to do is go claim it. Hetch Hetchy belongs to San Francisco.
Yeah.
There's no connection other than the pipeline. So California has a very fragmented water system, and nobody really in control of all of it. And so you've had big projects. You had the California Aqueduct, which under first Governor Brown, and then you've had the Peripheral Canal under Jerry Brown, and now we have the tunnel, which was twin tunnels, now it's single tunnel. But for Solano County, we've had a water agency since 1951, and so it's a Solano County Water Agency. And then in 1988, it brought the rest of the cities into it, along with Maine Prairie, 2068, and SID. To look at water holistically and manage it. Mm-hmm. In 2014, under the Groundwater Sustainability Act, basins were required to look at how are they managing their water. We've always had, this area's always been, it can subside, but it bounces back very quickly. So there are areas in Solano County that add to the recharge very quickly. So over the next 20 years, we will follow this plan and prove that we can sustain the management of water.
Well, I know that the North Rural Vacaville Water District was developed because the people living out in the country, their wells were going dry. Mm-hmm. In fact, the house that we live in, Roger Miller built.
Yes.
And they had a cistern and a well. And so it was a trickle well, is that what they call it? A trickle something. And it would fill up the cistern, and then the water would be available with pressure and everything. Well, the well kind of ran dry, and so they used to buy water from Paul Pippo. And they had this big truck that would go and collect water, and he'd deliver it into the cistern.
Yeah, that was a system that wasn't fully permitted.
Oops.
Yeah, no.
We don't do it anymore.
No. Because you have the water system out there. And that's what drove Supervisor Carroll to put everybody together to build that system. Because there, people would run out of water. And Donnie, bless his heart, was delivering water. He called it livestock water. What you did with it after he delivered it to you was up to you. It was non-potable water.
Well, maybe they just used it for irrigation then.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Yeah.
People needed water.
Yeah, right.
Whether you took that water and took it in the house and boiled it to purify it, that was... But people needed water. People needed water for, you know, for their livelihood. They needed water for their livestock. But Don was a bit of a renegade.
Yeah. Oh, that was Don?
Okay. That was Don.
I thought it was Paul. Okay.
No, it was the well. Well, Paul, his father was a witcher.
Yes, I'd heard that.
So he witched a lot of wells.
Have you heard of a water witcher?
No, but I'm really, I guess, we didn't have water where we live there, and we used to use wells there.
Oh, yeah, we lived on a well at first when we first moved there, yeah.
Oh, I couldn't have survived.
You would have, Miriam.
But how does it go dry? I mean, I don't want to sound like...
The water table just goes lower. If there's not a rain for a long time, then the water...
It can be overdrafted, you know, too many homes on one pocket of water. Nobody really knows the contour of the water underneath. They know the water up here where you can attain it. But then how far down do you go and how deep is it?
Yeah. So, yeah, come over and I'll show you my cistern.
Oh, does this still work?
It's concrete and it's underground.
Oh.
So it didn't burn in the fire like the rest of the house.
Yeah, ours did burn.
The well did.
Yes. Yeah.
But you probably have a cistern as well. So what initiatives are you most proud of that have improved public safety, transportation, economic development in the 4th District over the last 22 years?
I don't think you can. So our role is, you know, countywide. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are things that I bring to the table that are particular to the 4th District. But it's the ongoing maintenance of either public safety or public health. When you talk about agriculture, it's the ongoing dealing with issues of agriculture. You know, how as a maker of some laws and sit on regulatory bodies, how do I ensure that I'm not overburdening those that I'm regulating or laws that I'm putting in place? So that's the constant of all of this work, is that it's constantly changing and evolving, and circumstances change. So I don't know that there's an initiative you can point to that's cured everything. It's just the effort every day trying to make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
And adjusting to the times.
I want to personally thank you as a supervisor for initiating the mobile crisis unit. That's made a huge difference in the schools as well as just in all of Solano County. Except Vallejo, I guess. But they have their own, but everybody else.
Yeah, but, you know, getting everybody together to help make that work, because it's not just the county. It's the schools, it's the cities.
Behavioral health,
but it's also the hospitals and all the clinics that you need to be able to work together that says, we're going to formulate this plan, and we're going to go out and try to make it work.
Yeah, it's made a huge difference in the population that I serve on Maumee County. Solano County.
And as we know, mental health has become a much bigger issue. COVID didn't help, and I know people like to blame COVID for a lot of things.
But
the mental state of folks, all the way from adults to children.
Yeah, suicide went
way up. As people, we have to interact.
Yes.
And when we're isolated in fear that something might happen to us if I meet somebody else,
it goes against our nature.
Except be careful of strangers.
Oh, yeah. That is true. Yeah. Stranger danger.
Yeah.
Patty, what is the mobile crisis unit for the people that don't know it?
If someone is having a psychiatric event, a crisis, you can call this number, and it's on our first podcast.
Okay.
Instead of having the police come and deal with this crisis, people with experience and training in psychiatric care come.
Yeah, they know how to de-escalate. You know, police have their role. Firefighters and paramedics have their role, but they're not trained to deal with those kinds of issues. If in the best world, we'd send mental health people out with police officers.
Yeah. When was that initiated? When was
what year?
That? Yeah.
Oh, just in the last couple of years.
Really?
Maybe not even 2 years.
I think you're right, because in school they didn't start introducing those phone numbers or the crisis or, you know, spreading awareness about it till my eighth grade year, probably. I didn't know what it was, so I'm guessing it was new.
Yeah. About 4 years ago, we did start the rooms in each school. We now have a room, like a behavioral health kind of room. It's a safe place. If something's going on with you emotionally and you just don't feel safe or you've got to withdraw, then these rooms are a safe place for you.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a hell of a disservice to the kids, not having those facilities.
Yeah.
I grew up with a school nurse. And so if you had a problem, you could go see the school nurse. Yeah. And this angel in white.
I know, right?
No, and truly, you could talk to them as opposed to talking to maybe your parents or your teacher or your fellow classmates. You know, guys don't do that.
Yeah.
But the nurse was there. And so they were everything. They were the counselor, the ones that patched you up if you got scratched. But when we got away from that, and they could see families over time, a lot of times you had the nurse that was in the same school and they could see the generations of individuals coming through and knew that.
Yeah. Now through cutbacks, you have one nurse for like three schools and she's there maybe a day or two a
week. I was just about to say, I only have one nurse at that school. For the 2,000 students, I go see one nurse every 2 weeks and say hi to her. And she's like my best friend, so you're right.
But she doesn't have much time to personally to help
she doesn't.
Each person to help
There's
them
about
the right
10
way.
Kids in there every time I go in. It's a lot of work for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate.
So if there was an initiative, put nurses with an S back in schools.
That's a good one. I like that.
And I think you could begin to solve a lot of problems, whether it's learning disability, or a physical disability, maybe. Yeah. I cheated all the time on my eye test until they changed it, so I had to get glasses when I was 13.
Wait, how did you cheat? So I could cheat.
Memorized it?
I memorized it.
Yeah.
Oh, really? They all the same?
They were for a long time.
E.
In elementary school.
It
was the same chart. And then when I got to Willis Jepson, it was a different chart.
Oh, no.
I kind of fudged the bottom line.
Well, that's a tip to listeners.
But all I did was, young man's vanity. Not that.
Oh, yes. Back to our questions. How do you balance preserving the agriculture character of Solano County while supporting urban and economic growth?
So I believe the cities have to do a better job of managing the lands they have already. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the political landscape. Every time you introduce a project that has higher density than the project around it, people tend to think, oh, well, those are renters or there's something else. And so they characterize the people that are going to live there differently than the characteristics of the community that's already there. So it's very hard for electeds to be able to say, yes, put that in my district. And because we've gone to districts, everybody is somewhat protective of their district. So some of the legislation that's been done, I think, is helpful, but nobody's come up with a set of legislation that can nest everything together. My job as a LAFCO commissioner is to look at making sure when a city wants to grow a little bit or annex, that they've made best use of the land they have already. If you have still a lot of land to develop, then you should be developing that. And just the cost of housing is going to force a little higher density. I know that's not probably popular with most of us that live in our own big yard or out in the country where we have 2.5 acres or 5 acres, that kind of sense of freedom. But in the community where you need to have most of the people are, and 95-96% of the population live within the cities. Mm-hmm. So characterizing Solano County, we are probably one of the most dense counties in the state because most of the people live in the seven cities. You know, we still have over 60% of the ground being farmed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's a very high ratio.
And looking out your windows right now, there are all those hills out there with nothing on them, except cattle maybe.
But that's still important.
Cause yeah, it is.
I think cattle's fifth in our crop report. Mm-hmm. Which at one point I was told by a brand inspector, there are more cattle in Solano County than there are in any other place. Because we have the hills.
Yeah.
We have the pastures. We have the hay, so you can
feed them.
Yeah, and in the southeast end of the county, down around Rio Vista, that area where there's still irrigated pasture, that's where they come to graze them off of it. And you get high-quality cattle come up this way. In fact, Harris Ranch, I think, still has a number of herds that come to Solano County to be grassed off.
Yeah, we were at Paradise Valley over the weekend, and they were all excited because they had just brought in goats to eat down all the weeds.
Yes, the goats. That's a big thing for us kids right now. We've been following around. They've been taking goats, like 50 goats at a time, to different houses in my neighborhood.
Oh, I see that, yes.
In Green Valley, and now I think they're moving the goats towards...
Is that
this
for
part
grazing,
of
right?
Yeah.
It's for fire prevention.
Do you rent it? How does it work?
Yeah, you rent the goats.
Where do you rent it?
Oh, from the goat renter.
There's a flyer going around. My parents were talking about there's a flyer going around that you could rent goats to come eat the grass.
The guys, they come and they set up an electric fence and enclose them in this area. And then they eat all that down. Then they move the fence to a different spot.
Wow. So it's for fire prevention. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which we need
in part,
right? Yeah, especially how dry I feel like this year is and summer's not even here.
Right. Oh, no, the Sierras are over 100% water right now, right?
Oh, really? We've had a lot of rain.
Yeah. So I guess it's the news I have been listening to.
We'll have to get you into a different...
Well, up north, we're pretty good water-wise. It's Southern California that's had somewhat of a drought.
Yeah.
But you talk about goats, so after all the 49ers have rushed in to make their riches... A lot of them didn't.
Country.
But there were a lot, there's a book called When the World Rushed into California.
Oh.
So people from all over the world came to California, to get rich. But a lot of them had agricultural backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So they saw this as like you would see in the Mediterranean. And so one of the first goats they brought in were the Angora, because the Angora could eat everything, even manzanita. That's how they started to clear the mountains and the mountainous areas.
Yeah.
Because the goats would eat it down, and then you could break it up. But goats were instrumental in farming early on in California.
Yeah, because they'd come to make their fortune finding gold. They didn't find any, so they started doing what they knew,
which was
agriculture.
Yeah.
More history from John.
I'm like amazed by all this. And I was amazed. There's two different kinds of goats, I guess.
There's all kinds of goats.
I look at it, I call it a goat, but I guess there's different. Is it the genetics?
Well, whatever you want to use it for, whatever it's used for. They're milk goats. They're like the Angora, the wool.
Oh.
So Angora sweaters and all that. That's where it comes from.
Boer goats.
Yeah, boer goats.
Pygmy. I want some pygmy goats myself.
Now I got to Google that.
On the corner.
Our neighbor? Okay, yeah. Those are the cutest goats. Oh, we're getting off topic.
Oops.
Moving on to public health and advocacy.
So you talk about cattle. Cattle were number four last year.
Number four.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And cattle is just cows, right? I mean, you didn't include goats in that.
No.
Yeah,
it's not dairy either.
Oh, beef.
Beef
cattle. Okay.
Moving on to public health and advocacy. You've been a national leader of the issue in childhood obesity. How has Solano County progressed in this area, and what initiatives are currently in place to support the health of children and families?
As a nation, we've done very well.
Right.
I was inspired by an individual called, whose name is Dr. Dick Jackson, who wrote several books. He was at CDC. He was the health director for California. He's had a chair at Notre Dame. He's been at UC Berkeley. And he wrote, actually, he started talking about health and health outcomes, and then wrote a book about the built environment, how the built environment... also leads to the health and well-being. But as a nation, we've not done a very good job, partly because we put a lot of preservatives in foods. Don't agree totally with Mr. Kennedy, but looking at some of the dyes that are being put into food, some of the preservatives, is really an area that should be looked at. Senator McGovern in 1977 put a committee together trying to keep the advertisement of processed foods away from children, to take them out of the ads.
Wow.
In 1953, Hasbro, the toy company?
Oh.
Hasbro. Put their first ads in what would become Captain Kangaroo.
Oh.
And they realized from...
I used to watch that.
Yeah. They realized from the polling that 50% of the kids asked for the toys that were being advertised on Captain Kangaroo. And
makes
then
sense. Makes sense.
And 80% of them got it. So they knew that TV and the kids shows was a good way of delivering a product and generally getting some response back for it.
Wow.
So then you saw all the cereal companies and the candy companies. Yeah. The advent of corn syrup has really been detrimental to the well-being of the people.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of factors that come into, you know, not eating good food. I mean, we have good food here, but yet you see in some areas where people that work in the fields can't afford the fresh food, but can afford
the processed
food. Processed food.
And I was going to add, I have two sons, which is 9 and 5. My husband and I try to read the ingredients, but there's so many hidden ingredients. If a person doesn't pay attention on these products, I think that's also something that people have to be aware. It has so much sugars and, like you said, the dye 3 that is possibly causing cancerous, and also for obesity and all these. There's so much I believe in. They have so much hidden ingredients that we don't know. I mean, these words are like, I can't even say it, all these things.
And they're just chemicals.
Yeah, in your head, that if that sounds that difficult, it's not good for me. I want to know where it's just simple ingredients where I can understand.
Yeah, I watched a show that said that there's something in fast food that makes it addictive. So you just want to go back to it.
Absolutely, yeah.
As a teenager, it's also hard that you can't afford, especially when you go to college. Now you'll see when you go to college, it's really hard. You cannot afford, you don't have the money to afford healthy food. And if you don't know about the health consequences of these products, that's why obesity at that age, I've seen it gets worse and worse. And now you have, you know.
When you're younger, you can work it off a lot quicker.
Yeah, that's true.
You're very svelte now, though, John. Huh? You're very svelte now. You had more weight on you before. You look great. Looks like you.
So I've been a diabetic for 32 years.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not totally insulin dependent. I still take an oral medication, insulin, 2 or 3 times a day. So when you become a diabetic, generally your pancreas is already it's lost about 50% of its ability to make insulin because it is slow coming on. And there are particular ethnic groups that are more susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that can trace their bloodline back 500 or 600 years to this country before the Europeans came and brought all of their foods, you know, there was no frying of food in Mexico until the Spanish got here and brought you know, the hogs. There was no oil
pork
to cook with. Yeah.
Okay.
Yet if you went to a Mexican restaurant, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We love the manteca.
Actually, Patty was telling me you have a deli, a restaurant,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. And she said it's the best food. So I'm going to try one of these. It's in downtown Vacaville, yeah, right?
Let's go. Split a burrito, though, because they're love way
burritos.
Too big.
I actually even feel like it today. Maybe after this.
So
the issue of obesity continues. Or a society that has food so available to us. You know, what the industry has done is it's made it shelf stable,
mm-hmm,
and has made it so that it lasts a long time.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the downfall, but we have plenty of food.
Yeah.
how we begin to solve that, and it's gonna, the rates have not come down, you know, from the time I started doing the work. And I kind of left the work in 2010 because the county was going through a recession and I was participating in a lot of conferences and thought it was unfair for me to spend money when I'm laying people off. That so I backed away from it and haven't done a lot of work with it, but I was not a health expert, not my background, but was an advocate as an elected official. I was chosen by NALEO, which is the National Association of Latin Elected Officials, to be one of 12 people that sat on a national panel to work on the issue to build what we call the healthy toolkit for people to look at, you know, everywhere from the types of foods we grow to instilling policies to building communities. There's a way to build a healthy community. It's not just randomly going wherever you want to go. Stress has a lot to do with a child's upbringing. If I'm in a community that's very stressful, my maturity levels will rise quicker because
you learn.
It's defensive.
Yeah, yeah, and the cortisol levels go up. Yep. So what additional resources are needed to address the challenges of poverty and homelessness in our region?
Wow.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
It's like nobody knows the answer.
No, the homeless issue is, you have to remember each one of those is an individual.
Exactly.
And they didn't grow up to be homeless, mm-hmm. nor did their parents raise them to be homeless. Mm-hmm. And you have to look at them that way. And until we're willing to sit down and take every individual and provide some kind of program for them to help them. Or I say this, you know, some people can't take care of themselves. So until we're willing to step in and be the caretaker, I don't think you solve it.
Yeah, so about 30% of the homeless have a mental illness, and then you add substance abuse to that, and it raises it up to about 60%. I don't know what the other 40 is. They've lost jobs, you know, it's just importunate.
Well, take the young mother that went through a divorce and now has two kids or three kids.
And what no income.
No income, or maybe has a job that can't sustain the ability and is on the edge of losing an apartment or a house.
Uh-huh.
I think if we're going to step in, that's where we step in.
Yeah. Somebody that can take care of herself with just a little help.
Just a little help. And not to say that she earns too much of that forward, that way we can't help her. What is too much when you're down around the poverty levels anyway?
And things are expensive.
Oh, in California?
Oh, yes. And even us, I know every mile you get away from San Francisco, it gets a little cheaper. But then you start getting closer to Sacramento and things are going up.
But we all pay the same amount of tax on gasoline.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about fairness, it doesn't matter what scale of income you have, you all pay the same price for gas, the tax on gas, which is over 50 cents.
It's ridiculous. Oh, it's more than that, isn't it? It's a dollar something, isn't it?
That's the state.
State, yeah.
But
talking county.
No, just state level. I'm not talking about the federal tax.
Oh, I see. I see, which is in the same price.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what was the other part of that?
Homelessness and poverty.
Which are very close to each other.
They are. Mm. They totally are. And there are lots of nonprofits out there trying to help with all of that. But again, where do they get their money mm-hmm. to help? And the number of actual dwellings that are available that are affordable.
There's not enough housing for the people that can afford housing.
Hmm. Yeah. Our population has decreased a little in California, hasn't it?
But the housing shortage is still there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So rent is expensive and all the things that come up with that is expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I see Vacaville's looking tomorrow on their city council at a hotel to convert those into some housing quarters.
You know, there are some people that will do well with that kind of support, but there are others who need wraparound services to help them stay on the straight and narrow to be able to maintain whatever has been given them. Because there have been instances where they've done that with motels, and then they put homeless people in there, and they're destroyed. They just destroy this brand new place.
Well, whose fault's that?
For whatever reason.
No, I mean, whose fault's that?
The person in the room, I guess. I don't know.
But you're giving a person that probably doesn't have all the tools to manage it themselves.
Yes.
And throwing them in there.
Yes.
But without the support.
Yes.
To make sure that things are going right, the inspections every day and all that, you know that these folks was a number of issues. Mm-hmm. So you can't just throw them in there and expect it to be okay.
Exactly.
And then feel good about, oh, I did this for them.
Yeah.
We did this for them.
Wraparound services, that's what that means, you know.
Again, that gets back to the commitment. If you're going to be committed to solving the problem, then take everything you need, the resources to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to do that, then we're just going to continue.
Band-aids.
Yes.
California, $24 billion later, over the course of 7 years. And what's happened? The homeless population has increased by 40%. Now, if that was a business and I was making those kinds of investments, I'd be thrilled to death, right? 40% increase in my business?
No, it's the wrong way.
No, but that, so...
And then Prop 1 passed, and now the state is going to keep a bunch of money that used to come to the county, and they're gonna try to address the homeless situation at the state level, which makes no sense to me personally.
They haven't done it. They haven't been able to do it. $24 billion later,
exactly.
They still haven't been able to do it.
Exactly.
And if you just down the line, you have to hold everybody accountable.
Yeah.
And you have to have a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to say, you know, put hard things in place to say, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
I know everybody has individual rights, but at some point when your rights push over all my rights, just think about it now. I mean, there are no public bathrooms, right?
Right.
If you go to a grocery store or a store,
they don't want you in there.
No, you have to ask for a code to get in, or they have to come open the bathroom for you.
They have to protect themselves, right? So I understand it, but it's...
As a founding member of the Delta Counties Coalition, what progress has been made in protecting the Delta, and what are your ongoing priorities for this vital resource?
So the purpose of that organization, it was the five counties that make up the Delta: Contra Costa, San Joaquin, Sacramento, Yolo, and Solano.
Mm-hmm.
We are the counties that make up the Delta itself.
Yes.
It was put together to ensure that the Delta maintains itself as a place, and that whatever project comes forward, whether it was the Twin Tunnels, originally it was a peripheral canal that went around in the 80s, the Twin Tunnels, and now the single tunnel, projects move forward. I just read that the governor is going to push before he leaves to lay the groundwork to do the Delta Conveyance, which is the single tunnel. We, the Delta Coalition, still believe there are things that have not been addressed. You know, there's the whole issue of levee maintenance. There's a way of getting water through the Delta, but it requires a lot more work. And even if they put the conveyance system in place, they can only take water. They call it the big gulp, little sip. So they'll take water when there's plenty of water, which is the wintertime. But the water still has to flow through the Delta, and it still has to go to Tracy through the Delta process and be picked up and pumped down.
Mm-hmm.
This way, it's a 50-mile tunnel underground. It would end up at Tracy to be pumped down to Southern California.
I did a report in college in 1973 on the salination issues through the Delta. Is that still a problem?
That's why you have Shasta Dam.
Oh, explain that.
Well, Shasta Dam was originally going to be built by the state of California, but in 1930 in the Depression, California couldn't afford to build it, so the feds came in and built it. Two purposes was for flood control and desal, so that there was enough water to push down to clean the Delta and keep it essentially salt-free or brackish-free.
Yeah.
And there's the 2X, where they monitor the selenium in the water. It's just past the Suisun Marsh and the fresh... No, it's right there where the freshwater gate is, because there's a freshwater gate that comes into the Suisun Marsh to keep the marsh brackish and not salty.
Oh, okay.
So they constantly monitor that, and that's what Shasta does, is release water to push through the Delta and keep the salt out of it.
Did not know that.
Yeah, that's why and some of that water goes down south, but that's why the state has its own water projects, mm-hmm. and the federal government has its own water projects.
Oh, federals. Okay.
Yes. California is not run by one entity. a whole lot of water agencies that all have what they believe vested rights in water in California.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's complicated with federal and state going.
But California is unique in that it has a higher standing than the federal government, because when California came as a state, they demanded that the state have control over all waters in or entering California. And that was the Treaty of Guadalupe, Hidalgo de Guadalupe, which was signed in 1850. It also gave everybody the same rights, but the natives and the Mexicans didn't get the same rights.
Oh. I have a question. This is off topic, but you seem to be pro in this water thing. So the critics always say, like when the fire happened in LA, that there's not enough water in California or it's mismanaged. I always read this in the news, or the critics are talking about it. What do they mean by this?
There wasn't enough water. It was a 100-mile-an-hour wind. There's not enough water to put it out. It wouldn't have been.
No matter how much water.
How much water you have.
Okay, so it wasn't about mismanaging the water. There wasn't plenty of water.
Well, they're going to say that, you know, why did they do the maintenance? Well, they have to do the maintenance at some point.
Okay.
Yeah.
San Francisco is drilling a pipeline right now for the Hetch Hetchy because they've never shut off the valve. Because they're afraid if they shut the valve off, it'll break halfway down or halfway up. So, you know, if they were to shut it down and do repairs, what would San Francisco do? So that's why they're building a new pipeline.
Mm.
We have a lot of aged infrastructure in California, which we have not kept up with. Should those homes have been built there, knowing that you can have winds up to 100 miles an hour? There's nothing that could have been done to stop that.
Well, there you go, critics. That's your answer.
Well, you know, we always, after any incident, we need to find something to blame, someone or something.
That's right. That is right. That's even in the familial, too. If I do something wrong, I try to find my husband or someone to blame. Sure. Paulina, to your question.
The Solano Public Arts Committee plays a role in enriching the community. Can you share recent or upcoming projects that highlight the importance of arts in Solano County?
Are you talking about the county's committee?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. So that hasn't been very active in a number of years, and the reason that committee was established was to provide public art when we did projects.
Ah.
That's why you have the art downstairs in any one of the new buildings built since 2004. A certain percentage of the cost of the building is dedicated to public art. And we had a pretty robust committee of artisans. And if it was going into a building, one of our buildings that predominantly was a department, like Health and Social Services, mm-hmm. the Sheriff's Department, we had a committee from there that helped us, you know, look at the art. And then the first art project was Mother Nature on the roundabout there on Abernathy
in
Rockville.
Oh, right.
Local artisan. The artisan had to be either living or working in Solano County.
Is that out? Was that the guy that did that?
No,
out of Mancus Corner?
Mm-mm.
No, it's a different.
But she did Cesar Chavez down in Sacramento. She did a bust of Willie Brown. She's out of Benicia.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Solano County, that's fabulous.
When she did it, the first is a big clay sculpture. And then they take it down and they have it casted. And then they make the casts of it.
Okay, let's go home that way so we can look at it
together. Okay, you know the way?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, you just follow Texas. Go straight up.
We'll do that. We'll take a picture.
As soon as you get out of Fairfield, it becomes Rockville.
Uh-huh.
And okay. then you do the
it's
roundabout.
It's a pretty road.
Oh, really?
Then you go down Rockville. If you keep going down, it's Rockville Road with Rockville Park and hiking area. It's a really pretty area.
Mm-hmm. Well, nice. Hey, I'll learn a new place.
I'll show you. Last question. How do you ensure the voices of your constituents, especially from rural areas, are heard in local and state level discussions?
Well, I'm fortunate. I have a very active community.
Mm-hmm. They let you know what they think.
They let you know. Yeah. You know, the ability to email or come to a board meeting or catch me someplace in Vacaville or Dixon. It's somebody asked me one time, you know, how is it, do you ever get to sit down and eat? And I said, well, sometimes. You know, at a grocery store. But that's part of the responsibility of taking on a job like this.
Yeah.
That you are subject to the public, and the public can come up and talk to you anytime they want.
And supervisors' meetings are second and fourth?
First, second, and fourth.
First, second, and fourth. I have spoken to the supervisor several times on issues regarding mental health.
Yeah.
Laura's Law.
Laura's Law.
Yeah.
I wasn't a true fan of that.
Oh, no?
No. I didn't know how it was going to work mechanically. I didn't understand the mechanics of it.
Yeah, I understand. Not that many people have taken advantage of it, but those who have benefited.
So you do that, you know, the cost of putting it up and getting it running versus the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one life's worth it, isn't it?
Right? Yeah. Isn't that what we're here for?
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah.
But that goes all the way back to the homeless issue, too, or any of the other issues we deal with. County government is over 1,000 years old, and it was created based on the same principles that we have today. You know, take care of the poor, roads, courts, and all those things. We do what cities aren't chartered to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a city, but you need a county.
Mm-hmm. I know behavioral health in the county of Solano County is excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. My son imbibes.
Yeah.
And is very well cared for. He just spent 6 weeks in a rehab facility for a mental health condition and came out much, much better. So I thank you personally for that.
But again, the form of county government, the form is over 1,000 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's still pretty basic. We are instrumental in setting up, like Solano County was one of the original 27 counties when California became a state.
Oh.
And so we're instrumental in setting everything up, the governments, in the governance of a county. The first thing you have are trustees that run everything. And then it gets broken up. Schools then have their own group. Generally don't have a city until it becomes incorporated and it breaks away from the county.
Oh,
but then the city takes on all its responsibilities for fire, police, streets, and all of that. But they don't take on are the social services that the county still provides. Unless you have a very forward-thinking city that wants to do some of that.
It's expensive.
It's expensive, yeah. And besides that, it's the county's job, right?
Yeah.
I love throughout the whole interview how, John, you're so humble. Every time she gives you credit for something and thanks you, and you always give it to someone else. Didn't you find that humbling?
Sure,
that
you did.
Yes. So we appreciate that.
A very good friend of mine said something. He was honored, and he said, I haven't done anything any differently that you wouldn't have done given the same situation.
Mm.
And I want to believe that everybody has that goodness in them.
Mm.
But given this position, you try to do every day what you're charged to do, and that's take care of the community. It's not that I'm perfect. It's not that I'm the only one, but I happen to sit in this seat right now. So it's my responsibility to do the best job I can. I don't take that lightly. As I said to somebody said, well, you make too much money. I said, you know what? I never backed up to a paycheck, and I don't back up to this one. I give you your money's worth.
Oh, yes. Well, listeners, we will end this episode with that message. Ladies, do you have anything else to say?
No. Oh, thank you so much for giving us
your time.
Thank
for
you
a long
so
time.
Much.
Oh, have
yes,
you?
Yes,
oh,
she
yeah.
says hi.
Oh, really? Yeah. Now will you tell us this?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, John. Thank you, ladies. Till next time, goodbye.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Thank you.